Welcome to CCH Healthcare Podcast. I'm Kelly Jackson, and this is Voices of Valor. This podcast was designed to hear the experiences of our veterans in the healthcare system. So today, we're going to be at Scarlet Oaks Rehab and Assisted Living located at 440 Lafayette Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio. We're going to be talking with our first veteran, Herbert W. Smith, today. Welcome, Mr. Herbert.
Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, I want to start off by saying thank you for your service, because freedom is not free, and we know that. We know somebody had to pay the cost, and we appreciate your valor. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's get right into it, Mr. Smith. Can you tell us what branch you served in?
The Army.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? What made you want to join the military?
I had cousins, and my dad was in World War II, briefly. And I saw a lot of those brothers came home and leave, and they had uniforms on. They were marching, they were walking. I was in high school, in grade school, rather. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted a uniform on. I wanted to go in, at that time, to be what you might say, up your grade in terms of a job. You know, wasn't job were from Mississippi, where I'm from.
Okay.
And it was a thing to do, and I wanted to go. And I was drafted under President Kennedy.
Okay. All right. All right.
No, Johnson. President Johnson. No, I received my draft card from President Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And when President Kennedy was assassinated, Johnson took over. And then I went down. Two Greyhound bus of us went down. Capital of Jackson, Mississippi. And they sent two of us back.
Oh, wow.
That would not fit OF until. And it was kind of crushing to me. Mm-hmm. People laughed, you were not good, and whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I waited 2 years and I volunteered, and they took me.
Oh, wow.
John took me, so, and I went in then.
Awesome. So how was your basic training?
It was a real education. It was fun. It was funny. It was scary at times. And just say one thing, funny thing about it. Mm-hmm. Last day up there, we were taking our infiltration course. You go down. You tell your buddy next to you, say, "Move out behind the tree." He said, "Cover me." Well, my rifle jammed, so I didn't cover that man. Nobody know but me. So I had to pretend I was covering him. He was running, but he was not covered. I didn't shoot. Because he wouldn't fire. And then when I got down to the inn in Fort Polk, Louisiana, that was a wild hog that fell into the foxhole. So you're supposed to jump into the hole, whip your bayonet on your rifle, and you shoot and stick. Mm-hmm. But when I was going down, there was a hog in that hole. And I don't know. He had probably been in there maybe a week or so. I don't know. And he was mad. I know about hogs. And for some reason, the machine gun shoot over your head. Mm-hmm. Everybody, and I was going down, but I sprouted that hole, crossed it, lay down on top of it. Mm-hmm. The machine gun going over my head, and they said, get in the hole. Well, I couldn't raise up then because the machine gun was flying over my head. And so if I knew if I got in that hole, and small as it was, I wouldn't have been able to stick that hole. Mm-hmm. He would have got my legs. And so I lay there. And it was over. And then they came down, and well, the CO, and then Sergeant all up came down, and of course they chewed me out and called me everything but a sunflower seed, so they told me in the Army, just don't try to explain them, just say no excuse. Mm-hmm. And you get by better. So that's one of the funniest things about it.
That sounds like a funny moment, right?
It was funny because they couldn't believe that what they were seeing, and they never seen nothing like that. But 331 men in my platoon. Mm-hmm. And I was out there that day and did that. Everybody was looking like a machine gun guy that was fine. They didn't know what had happened. They didn't know if it hit me or what, because I was laying across that hole, but the hole was in that hole.
Right. So what was your military job?
Oh, driving. I was a chauffeur.
Okay.
Started out as being a chauffeur, and then I'm up to a public affairs office. And yeah, where it's all in one office. Public affairs, regional affairs, local affairs, I was in there. And that was mostly a chauffeur. Hmm. And you take a test for everything you can do best. Yes. For some reason or another, I came out high on driving. I don't know.
How How many years did you spend in the military?
I spent three. And it was when I graduated with 331 guys, three of us didn't get no orders. The rest of the guys gone home, went on to Vietnam, went on whatever. So I stayed in the barracks another 3 weeks by myself, three of guys, nowhere to go. And they say, well, you're going to, well, when I did get my orders, he said, you're going to Germany, USAG, but that's not what it was. That's the United States Army Garrison. And I left home, told my mother I was going to Germany and everything. But I didn't know who I was going to South Carolina, from Mississippi, that I was going to Germany. But anyway, I wound up in Panama Canal Zone.
Oh, wow. What year was that?
1966, July the 10th, 1966.
Wow.
And at that Fort Polk, Louisiana, it was called Camp Polk in World War II. My dad was there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a Camp Polk, and it was a Camp Shelby in Mississippi. Still is a Camp Shelby in Mississippi. And Fort Polk was, they named it Fort Polk when I got there, but my dad was there. It was Camp Polk. Mm-hmm. And now it's not either one now. They just changed the name about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
important. Yeah, but it's another conversation on that one, but they just changed the name, so it's not Fort Polk no more.
Mm-hmm. So every soldier's experience is different in the military. What was your experience in the military?
I guess meeting got men in there, because when I was in, women wasn't in there with me. Women, no female. Well, a few, you know, no other places, but not where I was. Places. And I saw guys that are from Idaho or different places, that even Americans that didn't, American Indians and American white people and blacks. They live in the certain part of the United States. They weren't used to being around a lot of black people, and they weren't used to seeing this kind of things. And it was a whole different thing. And I saw a lot of that, you know, went on. And then after, you know, several time went on, they got comfortable with it, you know, accepted. And when I was black and white sergeant, we all together. So
yeah,
Truman changed that in 47. Mm-hmm. You know, there would be no more black and white army. Mm-hmm. And that's when that book was changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, as an African American, how was your experience in the military?
To be truthful, it didn't bother me, because I'm from Mississippi, and I saw a lot of things that happened before. You know, I went in, and the thing that was going down, I was already used to. I've been taught to it. I knew that. So I rode right through Alabama. The bus driver, I rode in the back of the bus. So I left it riding in the back of the bus. People don't know that. And a friend of mine from Mississippi, he came back driving the bus, and he drove for 35 years for Greyhound bus. But we went through the bus drive, right there, Rosa Parks, our apartment building. This is Martin Luther King's house right there. I'm looking on the bus, or sitting in the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. Greyhound bus from my hometown, yes. But I knew all those things that was happening as far as us getting along with race and prejudice and stuff like that. I knew about all of that, so it did nothing surprise me. I mean, I saw things that happened. Mm-hmm. I knew how to go around them or deal with them, you know, and to follow myself and not just follow the crowd off. And like I said, a lot of guys got on drugs and things. Mm-hmm. And I was not, I didn't get on drugs because from my hometown where I came from, people used to laugh at me because I didn't know that. I didn't know nothing about no marijuana until I was maybe 25 years old. Never heard of it, never seen it.
All right.
And I'm out of my little hometown. And I tell a guy in my little hometown in Mississippi, we only have one police. Mm. Okay? And he only work on once a week on Saturday.
Yeah.
I never see him. He had a gun, but I don't know if he had any bullets in it or not. But he had no stick. He never seen. I never seen him hit nobody. Never seen. He didn't have no handcuffs either.
No.
But damn Mississippi, but where my hometown. The guys ask me, "Where are you from?" I tell them, "They don't believe that. It's happening right now."
Yeah.
My hometown, where I'm at from right now. They're a little bit different now, but yeah. Wasn't one policeman, so I didn't have no.
Yeah.
We just behaved. What I'm trying to say. Well, yeah. young people weren't still bringing in the banks and things. They wouldn't have bothered one of us. We just left each other alone.
Right. Speaking of young people. So today, if a young person was getting off track and needed discipline, do you think the military is a good place for them?
Mm-hmm. I say that because of the the discipline, like you said, mm-hmm. it's follow up what you do. You see, my mother and dad, he didn't just tell you and left alone. Mm-hmm. You follow up what you said. Mm-hmm. You know, ask me to repeat what I said again. Mm-hmm. So that's what they did in the military. And my dad and mom say, okay, I want everybody time to go to bed. So I gotta go to bed. Well, you gotta go to school tomorrow or whatever else. So they were doing that. So everybody understand what I just said now. Okay, well now tell me what I just said then. So they did the same thing in the military. Mm-hmm. Tell me what I said. I'm just saying because my brother was in the Navy and he said the same thing, you know, and they asked me, could he swim? And he said, yeah. All
right. Yeah, just it's
the wrong thing to do, he did. So you on the ship out there, but he told the man he could swim, but he couldn't swim. And so they pushed him in the water and they had to go get him. So he know how to swim. But anyway, the parents would tell me, don't ask me again, because now you tell me what I just said. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened is my grandmother told me, she said, bend a tree while it's still yellow sapping. In other words, don't wait till that child get, see, you take a small twig, mm-hmm. you set it out here. Hey, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to dig it up and set it over here. You know, I think I'm going to bend this tree over a little bit and bring it over that way. I know, I think I'll dig it up. After a while, the tree kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And nothing to do with that anymore. Mm-hmm. That means you're a grown son now. You let this boy eat what he want to eat, say what he want to say, go to bed when he get ready. And all at once now, you got company. You say, now, Jerry, you know it's time to go to bed. He said, Mama, you tripping. Mm-hmm. Well, she is, really. But that's not something to say to your parents. Right. But now, and then now you're going to get mad. Hey, boy, you're going to talk to me like that. Well, from one thing next to another one. Mm-hmm. My dad never had to put us that much. He didn't have to. He just told us what he had to do. And that was in the question you asked me now. Do you understand what I just said? Yeah. And that's when I got in the army, they said the same thing. You know, repeat what you said. Yeah. What I just said. Don't just say, yeah, I understand. You don't understand. Because you can get another soldier hurt. Because she said, I know how to operate my weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what their command is. You don't know it. And that's why you never will forget basic training. Mm-hmm. Okay, how long has it been? It's been over 60 years now. And I still remember basic training from day like it was yesterday. Wow. You don't forget it. And because they continue to go over that over and over and over and over and over it. You know, and you stay with it, you know, like your child, you know. And he's used to that. If he knows he's supposed to go to bed at a certain time, you don't have to go to bed every night with him, you know, argue with him. Why you go to bed? I don't want to go to bed. I'm not sleeping. Blah, 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 blah. See, well, you already told him that. If you continue telling him that, you know, don't talk with that child. Talk with him, you know, and sit down and spend some time with that child and listen to that child. Because a child can tell you something. Mm-hmm. Everybody can tell you something. If you listen, he can speak. If he can talk, he can tell. He can. You can listen. You can hear. So let him tell what he's trying to say. Don't say things like, you know, oh boy, well, you be quiet. But you know, you're just a child. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm grown. I know better than you. Hear what he has to say. You know. Mm-hmm.
So how was your transition back to civilian life?
Oh, it was all really good. Yeah, and it didn't have no problem. No problem because I was been working. His son was a child mm-hmm. from day one. I mean, from a small child, from babysitting to, you know, going to the on the farm, you know, baling hay, to you name it. I did all those kind of things. And so when I got out and came to Cincinnati to visit my brothers and things, and I said, the first thing I'm going to think about is getting a job. Mm-hmm. Wasn't about no, I'm going to go on the streets and I'm going to get on welfare. A lot of people told me to do that. You know, get on welfare, man. You know, go get your 3 or 4 women, put them on welfare. You need to work. You can do all this. No. That's not my thing to do. Mine is to get a job.
That's right.
And so when the police pulled me over, you know, and I'm driving a big car or something, you know, where you get this, where you get that money in your pocket? And I tell those guys, you're allowed to have $500 in your pocket, even lottery. $500, no taxes, nothing. Nobody can touch that. I don't care if you're not working on the property. Put one penny with that, make it $5.99, that's yours. Make it $500, you got to pay taxes on it. I tell the young folks that, he said, oh, nothing. I said, he can call the IRS in and tell them, take it downtown to the jury, and the jury said, you got $1,000 in your pocket. Do you work now? Are you win lottery? Well, if you win lottery, then they're going to know you did pay taxes. Mm-hmm. You didn't pay tax on that, then that's something wrong again. Okay, and I tell him about that, and so when he pulled me over, I can show him my check stub. you know, I worked or my badge at General Motors. I started off in Norwood, then I went to Fairfield.
Okay.
Up there, I stayed there until 20 some years up there.
Okay.
So I was ready to go to work when I got stuff. So there wasn't no, you know.
Right.
And I wasn't on drugs, never have been on drugs, you know, and it didn't bother me, see.
That's good. What was your most memorable moment in the military?
Let's see, beside that hog and that hole.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. I don't know. I guess one night we was waiting to a room to do at night practice. Practice on the infiltration course at night, and we're sitting in the bleachers out there in the middle of the woods out there in the forest, I mean, saying in Poco, Louisiana. And somebody told me, said Smith can imitate all the drill sergeants, and the platoon sergeant, and you know the company commander, and which I could, you know, this is that quick, I was easy to do that pick up. And so the lieutenant. No, somebody, one of the guys said, "Smith, go ahead and do it." And I'm sorry, took me said, "You do it. If you do, I'm gonna get you." You know, well, the lieutenant's standing right there. He said, "Smith," he said, "go ahead and do it." I said, "Sir," I said, "you know," he said, "that's an order." So well, you got it then. And so I had then did all the orders. When the lieutenant told me to say, he says, "Order, Smith," so I went and did it. And then after I got out, went to Panama. And I ran to one of my drill sergeants in Panama.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there about a year and a half, I guess. Then they want me to go over 50 miles from there to another base to do NCO training, you know. So I said, I didn't want to go. But they said, well, Smith, you're going to represent Quarry Heights, where we're here from. And I got there. I was E5 then. Mm-hmm. When I got there, I got off the train. And at that time, one of my drill sergeants, and he said, Smith, they put a set of E7 on my arm, temporary, you know, just to feel like while I'm going to school.
Yeah, elaborate more on those numbers, E5.
E7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay. Nine is either a first sergeant, sergeant major.
Okay.
Sergeant major got a star and three up, three down, four, three, four, five, three, yeah, three down and three up. And in the middle, you got a star. That's a sergeant major.
Okay,
you got a diamond in that first sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
Three up, three down, and down.
Mm-hmm.
But E1, you know, it's a private. My private training. Some guys made E2 out of basic. I didn't make E1. But I got promoted real fast. I made from 1 to 5 in 1 year, son. And I know guys been on 7 to 10 years. Now they wasn't even a 5 then.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So I did that and. Oh, I guess maybe, you know, and I worked for my boss was Air Force colonel in a public affairs office. He's an Air Force colonel, and I was Army, so that was a good thing to have. And so they had me before the board, like I'm sitting here now,
right.
And was, you know, getting ready to get promoted. And they asked me questions, so he said, he thought I was nervous. He said, Smith, he said, how many barks in a dog? And so I laughed, you know. I said, how much gas is in a dog, in a horse?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just couldn't have been joking. But all them lieutenant and captains and colonels all sitting on the table, they thought they had me sniffing, they didn't. I wasn't scared. And so that was one of the times, you know. And
so you sent us some photos of you and a young lady, and also just of you. Can you elaborate more on those photos? What was going on around that time?
Oh, right there. I just got from work. See, just got out of my car,
mm-hmm.
Came from the public affairs office, came out the mess hall. The mess hall is my background right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the fourth floor right there. But now the first floor got one glass window down there. Second, third, and fourth floor, there was no glass window in those barracks.
What was your mind frame?
Send a picture home to my mother.
Okay.
You know, and because she didn't want me to go, oh, she had a fit. And I was 23 years old, and I slipped off.
Oh, wow.
And my two brothers behind me did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Slipped off because my mother was thinking about World War II, and it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. Yeah, the American Army was bad. Anybody knows that was in the Army. Anybody wouldn't, they still know that it was bad.
Let's talk about
it. You know, well, for as trade is concerned, you know, and yeah. I talked to some men that told me how bad it was, you know, and they had white officers over black soldiers, you know, so they didn't have their own officer. They had their own officer, but they had another white one over them, all the way from the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And he was over here, and they was over there. I got General Colin Powell. You heard of him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got pictures of him. I got his whole book there. And he was telling me, he said, in the book, he said, they sent him to Fort Benning, Georgia. He had his Volvo, just came out of Germany. I think he was a lieutenant or either a captain, a real low ranking. And he drove down to Alabama, getting through Georgia, and police pulled him over, and you know, and Johnson was running for president then. Mm-hmm. He made him take a stick off his car and all that kind of stuff. Then when he got there, at Fort Benning, Georgia, and he was allowed to go to the officer club. No, allowed to go there. You know, but long story short, that base now is named, officer club is named after him now, and that base, and the bridge that come out of the town named after him now. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so he went to one of them drive-throughs, you know, where you go to, like Christian or somebody, they put him a tray on the side of your car when you order your sandwich.
Yeah.
And he said that. And then when the girl come out, she said, you know, but he's a light-skinned dude, he said, nice hair. She said, are you a foreign, are you a Puerto Rican? He said, no. Are you a foreign exchange student? He said, no. She said, well, I'm sorry. Can't serve you, but you go to the back door, I'll give you it. And he said, he almost lost it, but he said, I quote now, I'm reading the book. He said, thought about what my mother told me, when you go down south, what's going to be happening, you know, and if you don't let them take your joy from you, don't let them run you. And he, well, you know how he wound up doing. Make long story short, he wound up being the Joint Chief of Staff. You know, all the way from that four-star general. And, but if he had stopped then, it would have been difficult. He said, well, no, I'm not going to let that stop me. And that's that. So I kind of like, you know, saw those people there, and I talked to the guys that was in their service. Korea War, they told me how bad it was, you know, in the Korea War. But I saw the guy come home with the uniforms on, so that made me want to have a uniform on too. So, and so my two brothers went in, but after I went in, and they got out of high school. And at the time, I was glad, you know, when they graduated, both of them graduated same time. Mm-hmm. They caught up with the other guy. And but they know my mother didn't. My dad passed when they were little babies. They knew my mother didn't have money. Now, I was in Mississippi at the time to send them to college. So when you got out of high school, it's no point in standing on the street looking for a job when there wasn't any job down there. And you're gonna start getting into drugs, or somebody gonna show you how to be slicker, or to steal something, or just make, you know, that we're gonna do it. Hmm. So he went in the Air Force, and the other one went in the Navy, and so. So he did his first tour in the Navy, he got out. He came here. We was riding about Good Sam Hospital, mm-hmm. and I said, Johnny, I said, are you gonna stay in? You see, you know, it was your first tour. He said, oh no, I'm thinking about it. I said, well, if you decide to stay, I said, go officer. Yeah, just talking. And he came back and said, not again. He's lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And then only up until when I went out of tour in Virginia, he got promoted to football colonel. And he gave me his lieutenant bar, put it on. And he walked out of the room, and then he had this lieutenant bar on his cap he had on, but he had the eagle on his shoulder. My sister put it on him, my older sister, and his wife put it on him. And I said, well, sir, I always did want to tell an officer, you got the wrong cap on, sir. My little brother, I'm so proud of him, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he did it a long time. And then his wife was in there, in the service. They met in the service. They both in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And then his son came up and, and he's in Air Force.
That's awesome. That's some, that was like some good times. And so we got another picture here. Elaborate a little bit on this other picture.
Well, we came home. I came home basic training, you know, and it was a girlfriend at the time. And we, Mr. Anderson, this black guy that was in World War II. Mm-hmm. And like I told you, he came home and he, got a GI loan, and he wanted to do photography and bought his equipment and everything else. And he came to my hometown, And he was taking, he did his own studio and everything. He did that until he retired. You know? But we went and took some pictures. You know, everybody, that's what you do. You know, you know. Didn't think more about that because I got my pictures at home and she had hers and I said, my sister, some, my mother got some. But those negatives, that man, Mr. Anderson, after he retired and got older, he's a friend of mine, my brother's wife, brought him. They was inquiring about those negatives because he had thousands and thousands and thousands of negatives. And he told me, say, if you take those pictures and let the world see us, you know, what I did and whatever, and I'll sell you these pictures and things, you know, because of the negatives. And it's just his thousands of pictures that he made. I'm on in Washington, D.C. right now, on a thing. On that. I didn't know that. But my brother was looking through that one night, and he saw that picture, and he asked me, what does that mean? He said, how old are you? I said, I'm 23. He said, this is you. And he sent me the picture on my phone. And I was like, yeah, this is me.
You look good. You look smooth. In but, your uniform.
And that was my first uniform right there.
No,
that was September the 12th, 1966.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when you came home, how did it feel?
Well, I came home and leave, believe it or not. I mean, there was a... I couldn't wait to get home. My first leave home, not that time. Mm-hmm. But when I finally got my uniform, I've been about a year and a half now. I got my uniform tapered, you know, and my shoes shining, and I know what to do now. And I couldn't wait to go down my hometown, go down my street, you know, see my people. Hey, what's up? Oh man, I had to go back home and take off my uniform. You know, they you know what about them? How they told us, you know, you're baby killers, and you know that Vietnam War, and y'all doing this, and you know all. You know, and why you go to them? A lot of guys were burning their draft card going to Canada back in the days. Oh yeah, I didn't do that. I got my draft card. It was a good thing to get those days. You know, it was like a ID. You know, when you turn 18, you get that. That's when they were drafting you. Right. And you get that when you turn 18. Oh well, you had that card in your pocket. You were somebody in terms of you know, I got my next step. I'm gonna be able to go out further from where I am on that term. So. That's what I had. You know, I had that draft card in the pocket, and it was just you know, they didn't like us for being in the service, you know, and I had all the other guys, white boys and all, when they come home on the plane, all in California after I've been there over there in Panama, and I did 3 years there.
Okay,
that's what I when you volunteer, you do 3 years, and then when they find out I was a volunteer. I'm in basic training. After we all together. And they call your name off. If you was drafted, you was called U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, your name and the U.S.
Right.
And I would call off. My name was R.E.
What?
You know, all these soldiers, 331 guys, they jumped on me and all of us. Man, you volunteered. You know, you blah, 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 blah. Why you volunteer? You crazy. Like, no, I'm not crazy. And that's what I want to do. You know, I mean, I felt that time. I said, well, if I don't go now, I'm not going to be able to go after a while. You know, you won't be able to make that basic training. To be too old to cut the muscle. I mean, you know, run or, you know, do that kind of stuff. I said, well, if I don't go now, I'm going to go. And I get a chance to see something in the world. I've been places I would never go again. Because for one reason, I don't have a reason to go again.
Yeah.
Number two, I wouldn't even have the money to go places I've been, people I've seen, you know. And then I got there, he sent me to Panama, and I went, had never heard of Panama. I never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. Not like I know now. Excuse me. And then when I got there, you know, the weather was so different that I never heard of it before. You know, you can't fly a kite in Panama because the wind don't blow. Mm-hmm. There's no glass window on the second, third, fourth floor up there.
Oh, wow.
Nothing, just one window, you know, but it wasn't bad, it didn't happen. But when it rained, the rain falls straight down. Mm-hmm. So that's something. That's the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean, 50 miles apart. Mm-hmm. And we stayed right in there between them, 50 miles straight right there. That's the only place in the world that two oceans come together, and that's where they could now cut at. Mm-hmm. So the boats could go by there. Come from New York to go to California to go to the backside of Africa, but now you don't do it now. Except through Panama.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Smith, you're brave to be here and to tell your story. It speaks volumes. And once again, I just want to thank you for your service. And I always say freedom was not free. Somebody had to pay the cost. And you know, you serving your country. We appreciate that, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there anything else you want
to? Well, I just want to say, you know, I thank God too, you know, that He brought me home too. Because I saw a lot of them gave some of us gave all. Right. You know, they never did make it home, you know, and I made it home again. And I just thank God for that, you know, and I'm blessed to be able to do, have gone to the place I went, you know, and came home. I'm proud that I did what I did. Yes, you know, I went, I mean, I had no idea, and we still don't know what that war was all about, what Vietnam was about, what Korea was about. We don't know. I don't know what it was about. I don't know World War II, people can relate to that, but what was the mother, we don't know. So I went, I'm glad I went, and I don't have any regrets in terms of a individual person thing, but I mean, the whole thing itself is not, you know, it's not where it's supposed to be at either, but I didn't personally have no problems in terms of, you know.
Well, you made it back, and you're here safely, and we just appreciate your service. Well, I thank you for coming on our show. Yeah. This is CCH Healthcare Podcast. I'm Kelly Jackson, and this is Voices of Valor, and we just thank you.